I always say it's a big show, but this is literally a big show because we are at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We're at the Fantasy Football Expo, and we are drafting. Yeah, it's a mock draft Monday with Scott Pienowski, but it's not mock drafts. These are real Kings Classic drafts that we just did. We talked through salary cap strategy. Nobody does that better than Scott Pienowski. We talk about the round two running backs and some of the picks you got to make in there, even if they're tough choices. So much content. I should stop talking. I should let you get to the episode. Let's get into it. It's Monday, August 12th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is truly and seriously and really a hell of a day to talk ball because we are at the Fantasy Football Expo. We are on location here from the Tom Benson Stadium at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Shout out to the folks who hooked us up with this suite. This is pretty electric. We have a great view overlooking the field. And join me to talk a little ball. The cherry on top of that great Sunday that I just built is the one and only Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
It is electric in here, and great to be at the Hall of Fame. Great to be at the Kings Classic. Great to be sitting a couple chairs down from you. Snake draft, salary cap draft. We get football teams. We get football to talk about. It's a glorious day.
I mean, Dontavian Wicks just scored a 65-yard touchdown in a preseason game before we got up here. I feel alive more than I've felt in months, Scott. And yeah, I mean, it's great to see you, buddy. This is literally the first time Scott and I have seen each other since either like late 2018, early 2019, pre-COVID, Scott. So this is pretty great. It has been a great weekend here so far at the Expo. As Scott mentioned, we drafted a couple teams today. That is what we are going to be talking about on this here podcast. But before we get to that, got to give you a programming note for your life. Sign up for Yahoo Fantasy Football League right now. We just drafted teams today. You're going to be drafting teams. So do it on Yahoo Fantasy. I mean, come on, you're listening to this podcast. Give me a break. What are you doing with your life if you haven't signed up for your league yet? But I will give you one more reason to sign up. Yahoo Sports and NBC are teaming up for a $1 million sweepstakes. Here's how you enter. You sign up for that private Yahoo Fantasy Football League, and you draft your team. Boom. That's easy. If you draft players that start and score a touchdown in the week one games on NBC and Peacock, you'll earn bonus entries into the sweepstakes. That is fantastic. Each person can earn up to 8 entries, one just for signing up, and up to 7 more for touchdowns scored in those 3 games. Deadline for entries is September 5th. So visit yahoo.com/fantasymillion to join. Speaking of drafting, like I said, Scott, we just did that today, and a lot of you all out there are drafting this month, which is why each week here on the podcast in August, we have a central theme to all of the podcasts. This is positional preview week, but we have to start it off with a very unique mock draft Monday, Scott, because it's not a mock draft. These are actually 2 real drafts we did today. A couple 14-teamers. One was a snake draft. One was a salary cap draft. Before we talk about our specific teams and drafts, Scott, I do just want to kind of get your feel for the whole day and the differences between drafting in person versus online.
Yeah, a lot of things to consider. These were both 14-team leagues, so our rosters may not be as strong as the rosters everybody out there is drafting. But, and I believe there's a relegation component to this league. If you come in last place, you get booted to a lesser league. So, yes. You know, people say, oh, these expert leagues, you're not playing for anything. You're all buddies. You know, you're all playing hacky sec. No, this is cutthroat stuff. And it's, I'll tell you, my head's still spinning because we drafted, you know, you do a snake draft as it is, will scramble your brain, especially a 14-teamer. And then you do the salary cap where literally the entire player pool is available to you, and you and J.J. Zacharyson are basically ready to start drop the gloves, and you know Ratcliffe's getting on people's nerves, and Bob Harris and the Fantasy Pros guys, you had a little rivalry going, and so it's I'm tired. My mind is a little bit. I mean, it's going to be fun to talk ball with you and talk about our teams, but it's a challenging day to do 2 drafts. You know, a doubleheader basically. You know, is the reason why most people probably have 1 draft in 1 day. But then again, it's exhilarating too. It's fun. We're in the toy department, and you know, it's a great day to hang out with your friends.
Dude, it was super fun. We had some great people involved. You mentioned them in the snake draft. We had Jeff Radcliffe. We had a couple reps from Fighting Chance Fantasy. Dennis Clawson was there. Pat Doherty, Jim Coventry, Full Time Fantasy had a couple reps, including Jody Smith in the snake draft. Greg Kellogg sat next to me, had a lot of fun with Greg, Fantasy Sports Writer Hall of Fame, just much like yourself, Scott. Yes, and you were on the other side of Greg. Then we had Pat Fitzmaurice from Fantasy Pros. We had Colby Conway, Bob Harris, Dave Richard, and J.J. Zacharyson. And you said that, yeah, this is cutthroat stuff, and it definitely is. But there was some hijinks perhaps going around, you know, maybe from your boy here towards J.J. every now and again. But, you know, that's part of the fun. And, yeah, I'm with you, man. My brain is basically mush. So we'll see what this podcast even comes out like, because
right.
I mean, by the end of the salary cap, especially, you know, we're trying to just, can I just go to the bathroom? You know, can I just go to the bathroom, and can I get AJ Dillon out of here in a dollar? So that will obviously be a very different part of the strategy discussion, but let's jump into, our snake draft first. Like I said, 14 teams kind of went over the order there that I just listed off. Scott, you were picking ninth. I was seventh. You were ninth. We actually got to choose our spots in order. I think I might have picked mine before yours.
Yeah, you had the 10 of hearts, which was a good card. I had the 4 hearts, which, like in poker, is a bad card. And I was glad in a 14 teamer. I don't like to be on the end. I know when Jeff Ratcliffe had one of the earlier nomination picks, he immediately took one.
He went first, yeah.
Some people like the wheel. Some people like picking first. You know, Andy Behrens talked a lot about how historically the number one pick has been advantageous. But I feel – and everybody's a different personality, a different perspective of the player pool. I feel for my personality, I draft better in the middle of a draft where I have a feel for the player pool. I'm never that far away from a pick where if you're picking first or you're picking 14th, you're going to go 20, 20, 22, 24, whatever it is, picks. And there can be massive runs. There can be massive shifts in the way the players are going off the board. And I just want to have a say in that. I don't like to be too far removed from my pick. So for me, I'm a middle of the draft guy. I would have picked, if I had any slot, I would pick 3, 4, 5, something like that. But I was relieved that 9 was still available. So I wasn't too far in an end, because that's just not my personality for a draft.
I think you and I wrote a piece for the site recently where we talked about the ideal draft spot. And I think I had said that 5 to 8 was kind of my ideal spot, because usually you're either going to get one of the top 3 running backs to fall to you, or if people go running back heavy, you're going to probably have your pick of a few of those top 4 receivers, to me, which is exactly what happened. Like I said, I picked at 7, and the first 6 picks went Christian McCaffrey, Bijan Robinson, second overall. Brian Drake took Bijan Robinson there from Fighting Chance Fantasy. I thought that was a pretty aggressive, but I really liked it. I like Bijan Robinson a lot this year. Jamar Chase was the first receiver off the board to Dennis. Then it was Justin Jefferson, Breece Hall, CeeDee Lamb. So I kind of just – I felt there was a teardrop there from Tyreek Hill, who was the player that I took.
Yeah, I mean, what's there to say? Tyreek Hill, if he stays healthy in the second half of last year, would have received an MVP push. Was pushing for 2,000 yards, uncoverable. The McDaniel schemes, too, was good enough. And so I knew you were going to take Hill, your receiver guy, on brand.
There was a couple times, Scott, when I made a pick and you go, of course. Which, by the way, though, there were a couple times you did things in the draft and I was like, of course. Yeah. So we were starting to get to know each other.
We were finishing each other's sentences by the end of the day. But so you take Tyreek, which was the right pick there. I think most people would have gone that way. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I want Sun God. I want St. Brown so bad. Kellogg's going to take him. And then I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe I'll take Jonathan Taylor and pivot to a running back hero build, which is kind of my preferred build this year. And then he took Saquon Barkley, who, with much due respect to Greg Kellogg, who's been playing for an awful long time. I don't view Barkley as a first-round pick this year. Yeah. A little bit nervous about him, so I immediately snap called with St. Brown. Just the feeling of Detroit's running it back, right? They kept Ben Johnson. They paid Jared Goff. They still have the great offensive line. Maybe they'll have a bigger role for Jameson Williams this year. But St. Brown, what he does is so – and I know sometimes consistency in fantasy football is a little bit of a false thing to chase, because receivers have so much variance, right? But the volume that St. Brown gets, the routes that he runs and he wins on, he's just going to be 8 to 14 targets every week like a drumbeat. And I love that type of player, a plus offense. It's, you know, maybe it's not the Chiefs, but it's one of the 4 or 5 best offenses in football, a dome schedule. And it doesn't hurt that I live 20 minutes from Detroit. So Amon-Ra St. Brown was a pretty easy pick for me in the 9 slot.
No, I thought you got lucky there, honestly, that Greg made an aggressive pick with Saquon, because I'm with you that I view Saquon, if he's a first-round pick in a 14-teamer, maybe, but it would have to be like one of those final picks in the first round. So I was surprised by Saquon Barkley, so I think you got lucky there with St. Brown. I want to ask you this, though, because there are some people that when, like, I look at my receiver tiers, and I'm not talking NFL tiers for a second, because I do think Amon-Ra St. Brown's a tier 2 receiver in the league, and he's like the top of tier 2. I also think in fantasy, he is a tier 2 receiver at the top of tier 2. I don't necessarily view him with Jamar, with Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb and Tyreek Hill.
Nor do I, by the way.
But you don't. So that was what I was going to ask is, do you think he is more of that tier two receiver? And if he is, what keeps him out of that first tier?
Yeah, well, just not enough touchdown equity. Mm-hmm. Doesn't dominate the intermediate and deep parts of the field. So he's never going to be Tyreek Hill. And he knows that. You know, even where he's drafted, right? He was a fourth round pick out of USC. Although, you know, once the guys get in the league and establish themselves, we don't care about that as much. But the other choice I had, because again, I love the hero RB build, is I could have gone Jonathan Taylor and then pounded the receivers. But I was worried in a 14-team league, we start three receivers, we start multiple flexes.
Should have mentioned that.
Yeah. I thought wide receiver was going to dry up quicker than it would in a more traditional format. So I'm like, you know, I want to break the seal in my wide receiver room. And I think there'll be a good running back I can get in the second round. Now, here's where I made a kind of controversial pick. Second round, I want to get my anchor and then go back to my receiver build. Kyren Williams is available, but man, I'm just nervous about Blake Corum. And I was saying to myself, I'm not even sure if I have Kyren Williams ranked ahead of Isaiah Pacheco. But I'm like, I just think Pacheco's the right guy. He's become a three down back, Andy Reid offense, caught the ball down the stretch. He's got a lot of touchdown equity. He's obviously shoved the other backs in that Kansas City rotation, you know, to the sidelines. He's a high snap share, high touch share guy now. I just think this is the right pick. I don't know what my rankings are. I'll change them before this podcast comes out to reflect that I picked Pacheco over Williams. Yeah. I think a lot of people may have gone the other direction on that.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to touch on this tier of running backs because I know I need to make a change in my rankings after being on the clock. And this is the best part about doing multiple drafts is you really look at your rankings and you put them to the test. And I mean, man, nothing, especially when we get to the salary cap draft portion, that'll really test how you feel about players. But that's almost just a completely different exercise because in a snake draft like this, you really do have to, when you're on the clock, weigh these players against each other. And this is a good player debate.
And this is how, you know, we do rankings and people out there probably at least have some kind of idea of tiers or rankings, or maybe you're working off our rankings, whatever it is. But as you said, those rankings get tested when you draft. Mm-hmm. And that's why you do mock drafts. And that's why you do best ball drafts. And that's why the idea that you're just going to draft once. No, but if you're listening to this podcast, you're not drafting once. You're going to have multiple teams or practice drafts, or maybe you did some best balls or different formats. And what happens is you have an idea what the player pool is like. And then when you're on the clock, you find out how you really feel. Mm-hmm. That's when your convictions kind of, you know, that you water them and they grow and you say, okay, so now Isaiah Pacheco's over Kyren Williams on my list. Now, are you worried about Williams at all? Corum, how do you view that backfield?
Yeah, so I actually have Pacheco over Williams, so I would have made that pick with you, and I want to come back to him in a second. But on the Kyren Williams thing, you know, I'll spoiler alert say that my third round pick was also a Rams player. It was Cooper Kupp. I'm a little nervous about the Rams ecosystem just being a little too fragile. There's your ecosystem ref, so you can take a drink right now, the folks at home. you go for it too, pal. I am just a little nervous about the offensive line injuries. I'm a little nervous about Puka's already dinged up. You know, Matthew Stafford's obviously an injury risk. Cooper Kupp's an injury risk. Shoot, I mean, Kyren Williams himself is an injury risk. But ultimately, I think Blake Corum will get mixed in a little bit, but you know, if you look at the games where Kyren Williams wasn't even like a 80% of the touches player, he was still a highly productive back. So if things break right for Kyren Williams, if things break right for the Rams, I do think he has legitimate top five fantasy back upside. Whereas with Pacheco, and I wrote this in the draft blueprint piece, that all of these running backs basically outside of the first tier, really these like second round to third round backs, they've all got at least one to two serious warts. I think the serious wart for Pacheco is just that the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes had more completions inside the 10-yard line than any other quarterback. When they get down there, they try to throw the ball. So I think he just has a touch lower touchdown equity than Kyren Williams. But like I said, I think I'd still take Pacheco over him. But yeah, Williams is definitely a risky pick.
And it's interesting. We get to the third and fourth round picks. We both ended up, this wasn't my plan. We both doubled up on an offense, and you doubled up on a Sean McVay offense, and I doubled up on an Andy Reid offense.
Well, you went in the fourth round, you went Rashee Rice. But yeah, so and I think those are two offenses that are good to double up on.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if we're trusting a coach, I think I feel pretty good about McVay. I feel pretty good about you trusting Andy Reid there. So again, second round, you went Pacheco. Greg took Travis Kelce between us. And then a bunch of receivers went off the board. I will throw this at you, though, because this is the one that tested my rankings in the second round. I really thought Devon Achane, Kyren Williams. My rankings said Achane. When I got on the clock, my finger clicked. In this specific scenario, I shouted it out because that's how we were making these picks, and which was super fun. I don't think I've drafted like that in a long, long time, so that was cool. I said Williams, but my ranking said Achane. So I'm going to have to go and change that. How do you feel about Achane and related to these other backs?
Yeah, Achane's tough for me because we're never guaranteed. I feel this way a little bit about Jahmyr Gibbs too. You roster these guys. You're not guaranteed on any Sunday they're going to lead their team in touches. You're not guaranteed if they have a goal. If they get inside the five. Oh, they just scored a rushing touchdown. You don't know that your guy scored.
Yeah.
There's a decent chance it was Mostert. There's a decent chance it's Montgomery.
That's a good point.
So that makes me a little bit nervous. But look, Williams was a league winner last year. He's one of the most impactful moves. Why we always talk about hitting the FAB market, the free agent market early. So if you hit on somebody, you get the most impact from it. And you know, him and Nacua were two guys who tilted leagues. Like maybe Nacua a little bit more because he was healthier for more of the season. But I think it comes down to what you see. A lot of people say, well, McVay's a one-back coach. And I think the best coaches work talent to scheme, not scheme to talent. And if they like Corum, you know, Williams can still be a second-round viable player, even if Corum has a role. You just don't want to be a 60-40 or a 50 or a hot hand situation or something like that. But look, when I punched Pacheco, or I guess when I called out his name, I knew that the determination if it's at the right pick or not, it's going to be tied to Kyren Williams. You know, my regret is going to be if Williams has another monster year, and he probably has a higher ceiling than Pacheco, then I'm going to feel like I blew it in the second round. I mean, that's already a lingering, did I do the right thing?
Interesting that you feel that way, though, because I think that if you just forget what happened in the draft, which the draft is over now, you know, now it's moving forward to the season. I don't think Pacheco will disappoint you to the point that you're looking back on this pick with a level of regret or anything, just because I think he is a very solid selection in his own right.
Well, so, it also may speak to some people. I know at some point every draft's about upside. You know, when you're making your final few picks, upside, middle round picks, upside, sixth, seventh round pick, upside. I think floor is part of the discussion in the earlier rounds. Yeah. And some people be like, that's crazy. I'm playing to win my league. I'm going to make the hair on fire pick every round. I still care about floor, and I guess maybe Pacheco's floor felt a little bit more sturdy to me, and maybe that's why I made that pick.
I think that's totally fair. And again, I mentioned all of those backs in the second to third round range have at least one wart. I think Pacheco, my wart is they don't throw at the goal line enough. But with Williams, it's Kyren Williams. It's he's had injury issues. There's another back in his backfield. There's offensive line issues. There's overall, like, that's actually more. And so again, that's why I'm with you. I think Pacheco's the right pick there. But on the Achane thing, maybe if I didn't take Tyreek Hill in the first round, I would have taken
Achane
over Kyren Williams. So again, Achane goes pick 25. Another running back was not taken until pick 41 by Dave Richard of CBS Fantasy, mm-hmm. Making your fantasy rosters healthier than ever. CBS Fantasy, Rashad White was taken there by Dave Richard. Just a ton of wide receivers. And three tight ends were taken in the second to third round range. Sam LaPorta was pick 31, Trey McBride pick 39, and Dalton Kincaid, aggressive pick by Bob Harris in the third round, pick 40 there. So all these receivers, Scott, anyone stand out to you? Again, this is a start three receiver league, full PPR, three flexes. So you have an incentive to try to hammer the receiver position.
Yeah, I did not like it getting pounded. I took Amari Cooper with my pick, who I felt maybe was a fourth round pick in a more standard league, but I'm looking at this grid and it's just a sea of orange. And that's when you start three that we did a mock draft on Yahoo maybe a week ago. And that's where the priority shifts, right? Where it's not, okay, I'll build equally running back or receiver, or maybe running back as a priority. It's receiver. I think a lot of teams wanted two receivers in the first three rounds. That was the predominant build in this room. And I think some teams went three receivers.
I mean, yeah. If you're listening to a show like this and you're thinking, what the hell are some of these picks? This is what you have to do when you look at some of these analysts and writer leagues. This is not going to, you know, mirror your home league with your buddies and stuff like that. Nobody's taking DJ Moore at the 27th pick in your home league, most likely, but he did go in the 27th pick here. So I will say I went with Cooper Kupp because I thought there was definitely a teardrop to the next guys, George Pickens, Amari Cooper, and Malik Nabers. You picked Cooper. Greg picked George Pickens. Malik Nabers went to Pat Fitzmaurice at pick 38. I thought Kupp was the last guy of a tier. And frankly, a couple guys that went before him, I didn't even think were in the same tier as Cooper Kupp. So I know I was trying to, I'm just saying all this about the Rams fragility, and I took two Rams players, but I'm a tiers guy. That's kind of the way I draft. So that was sort of my logic there.
Also, consider this. I mean, Cooper Kupp was probably the MVP of the league a couple of years ago. I mean, quarterbacks have to win the league MVP now. It's where NFL is right now. But Kupp is the best player in football. The year they won the title, they beat the Bengals in the Super Bowl. Puka Nacua, as great as he is, was always hurt in college. He's dinged up, not a serious injury, they're downplaying it, but he's dinged up right now, had an injury history in college. It's totally plausible to me that Cooper Kupp could be the number one receiver on the Rams. Why not? I mean, he's still not that old. I know he came in the league, 24, whatever. He's in college at 4 years when nobody really good did that, but he ended up being a great player. I find myself wanting exposure to Cooper Kupp, and I'm not getting him. He's just not falling to me. I didn't get him in the salary cap draft either, but I hope when we're talking 3 or 4 weeks from now, I can show you my portfolio and show an investment in Cooper Kupp, because I think he's really priced kind of at his floor. If he's just healthy, yeah. You won't regret that pick. And I think there's a reasonable chance of him being like a top five, top six receiver. Stafford's still there, obviously McVay, who we've talked about a lot. So I think getting exposure to Cooper Kupp is something I want to do right now. And unfortunately, I couldn't do it today.
Yeah, I have Kupp at wide receiver 17, which, yeah, if he stays healthy, he's going to beat that ADP 100%. I'm just accounting for some level of risk there, because I do think there's a gap in skill set now between Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp. Like, I think Puka has officially passed and is the one, but there is some, just again, level of risk there. But yeah, I mean, guys like DJ Moore, Michael Pittman, Devontae Smith went before Cooper Kupp in this draft, and I have them all ranked after him. And even a couple guys, again, in the next tier went ahead of him that I just, again, Cooper Kupp, I think, is a good pick this season. But I wanted to ask you about the Amari Cooper versus Malik Nabers thing, because like I said, Malik Nabers went at the pick after yours. We're in the middle of preseason here, Scott. I mean, like I said, Dontavian Wicks balling out. Caleb Williams tearing things up today. Andy Behrens, come back to America, buddy. Your quarterback is good. Come back to America. If you can't watch preseason football in France, I'm sure they can watch preseason football in France. But
how long are the Olympics? Like 6 months?
I don't know, dude. Does Andy even work here at this point? Like, is he work at this company anymore?
I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, well, we'll see if he ever
and,
comes
you know,
back.
Him and Djokovic have always been dead ringers. Maybe he was playing some Olympic tennis or something.
You know, that's pretty much the best point you're probably going to make on this podcast, Scott. But yeah, anyways, what the hell am I talking about?
I like to peak early.
Yeah. Let's peak early here in the first like 20 minutes or so. But no, my point of saying this is that the day before we left, Thursday evening, the Giants had a preseason game. And there's already screenshots on Twitter of like Malik Nabers throwing his hand up. I saw Nate Tice, our colleague, point that out, that on his first NFL snap, quote unquote, Malik Nabers is throwing the hand up.
Love
when
that.
He's open and doesn't get
the
target.
Throw me the freaking ball.
Yeah. There's accounts on Twitter posting screenshots like, look how open he is. It's like, come on, bro. Like, let's give it a beat. But I think Malik Nabers even said after the game, yeah, I got open. It's just, things have to go right to for the ball to come my way, which, by the way, I could probably have the slogan of reception perception be that. But I'm saying all this.
By the way, you mentioned that. That game was at Detroit.
Yeah.
Does it remind you of a game last year with the Raiders of Las Vegas? Monday night to Detroit, and Devontae Adams was waving the hand, Jimmy Garoppolo was airmailing him, like all day. The game that got Josh McDaniels finally mercifully sacked, and basically Garoppolo's starting career is basically over that night too. I mean, the Raiders bottomed out that game. The Lions dominated yardage wise. I don't know why the final score didn't reflect it, but that was. I almost thought Devontae Adams would be like, I'm done with this. I'm going to walk the earth. I'll go play in the CFL.
I mean, he basically did say some things like that on the sideline, according to that Netflix show. But that might end Jimmy Garoppolo's NFL career. Sounds like he might not even make the Rams' final roster as the backup. But anyways, nobody cares about Jimmy Garoppolo. Amari Cooper versus Malik Nabers. Did you have some conviction in not taking Nabers in this spot? Because he has just been a buzzy player of late.
And I like Brian Daboll. And how much better is the Browns quarterback room than the Giants, really? I mean, here's the thing with Cooper, though. I wrote an article last week about the most boring but good value players, and Cooper was one of the signature guys there. Five quarterbacks played for the Browns last year, and it's a motley crew. Deshaun Watson's a mess. They got Flacco off the couch. I mean, they have a bunch of other guys who will maybe never start another quarterback game in the NFL again. And Amari Cooper's quarterback proof. He does not care. He gets open. He produces. Meshes well with Stefanski. And the thing with Cooper, and then I take Rashee Rice in the next round, maybe Cooper and Rice are soft, quote-unquote, wide receiver twos. But collectively, they make maybe a lesser wide receiver two, but then a really strong wide receiver three. It's like the fingers individually, maybe they don't hurt you, but you put them together, you make a fist. That's the old Mike Krzyzewski quote. So I thought double-tapping receiver. And also, I think with Rice, to pivot to Rice for a second, I think and I'm no lawyer or anything, but I think we're deep enough into his situation that I think if he is suspended, it may be kicked down the road to maybe next year. So, some people be like, I don't want to draft a guy with any suspension cloud over his head. I think Rice might be in the clear for 2024. So, Yeah, does Cooper fit like a third round pick? You know, is he as good as some of the guys who went early in the round? Probably not. But I think taking two receivers back to back, it got me the receiver room I wanted. You know, one of the stronger top three units I can roll out there week to week.
Well, and the good part too about your receiver room here with St. Brown and Rashee Rice and Cooper sandwiched in the middle is that I do think Cooper, because of the quarterback issues, is going to present you some level of volatility. But I think Rashee Rice, if he's out there, is going to be a high weekly floor player. But you taking Rashee Rice in the fourth round does show a level of conviction that you think he's pretty clearly the wide receiver one in Kansas City.
Yeah, I think he established that last year. And again, it's, you know this more than anybody, receivers do different things. They added Worthy, deep threat, Marquise Brown on a prove it deal, 1 year contract. He's going to run a lot of clear out routes. Rice obviously will work underneath his room for all of these guys, but I think the target share has to favor Rice. So last year we were banging the drum all in the first year. When they get steering to Rice, when can you pick up this guy? When can we start him? When can we trust him? When can he become set and forget by the end of the year? And certainly in the playoff run, he has ascended to that. You see that so often with young players, right? They're almost like second year players in the second half of the season. And so Rice became that circle of trust player for us down the stretch in the playoffs. And I see no reason why he can't build on that this year, at least do what he did in the second half last year and maybe be a little bit better.
I know this player right now literally was just cut this weekend, but he does remind me so much of Juju Smith-Schuster early in his career, where I don't necessarily think he presents all the skills of the traditional outside number one receiver, but I learned this lesson with Juju in his second season that just because he doesn't check all those boxes, if the rest of the surroundings are right, that player can be an extremely productive player in fantasy, and there's no better situation than being Patrick Mahomes' wide receiver, especially with those two clear-out guys, as you mentioned, on the other side. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep running through some of these mid and then eventually some late-round picks in the snake draft. All right, we're back, Scott. We're continuing to roll through our snake draft in the Kings Classic. Like you mentioned, you took Rashee Rice. By the way, we'll definitely we're showing the draft boards on YouTube. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see that. We'll also link there in the show notes as well. So you took Rashee Rice, and then the running back run finally starts to take off here. Like I mentioned, Rashad White at pick 41, Joe Mixon pick 46. Then you take Rashee Rice, and then we get Zamir White, we get James Cook, we get Josh Jacobs, we get Kenneth Walker in this fourth round. We finally get some running backs starting going here. Scott, I think this is where I don't hate this pick that I made here at pick 50. It's Mark Andrews. He's my tight end four. I have him ranked as a tier ahead of Dalton Kincaid, who I mentioned. Bob Harris took in the previous round, but I do eventually, and we'll get to it, I double up on the onesie positions, and I started to hate myself for that. But overall, I still weigh Mark Andrews versus these running backs, and I feel much better about Mark Andrews this season than some of these guys.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, he has the ability to score 10, 12 touchdowns. He could be the tight end one. We like the Baltimore offense. Lamar Jackson coming off an MVP season. All Andrews has to do really is stay healthy. And even with the emergence of Flowers, there's always going to be – Andrews is always going to have tremendous touchdown upside, even with Henry there. Jackson doesn't run him in as often. So I'm okay with that. My strategy coming in, I was going to wait on quarterback. You can do well at any price point. And I was going to kind of feel out the tight end market. I think I waited too long. It didn't ultimately fill the tight end room the way I wanted to, but –
Yeah, you ended up with Dalton Schultz and Tyler Conklin.
That's
back
not good.
To back
I probably have the weakest tight ends in the league, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But the thing that surprised me is my pick was Ramondre Stevenson of the Patriots.
In round five, yeah.
Yes, one. Do I want to invest in the Patriots offense? Not really. Two, I talked about that hero build, that anchor running back build, and I started to think the running backs were better than the receivers that I was seeing as opportunity. So yeah. I took Stevenson here. My draft really got boring because I got Stevenson, bad offense, you know, kind of a good player, but not a great player, not an electric player. Next round, I took Cortland Sutton. You know, all that touchdown equity last year. How could that possibly repeat? Broncos offense could be, you know, we'll see how quickly Bo Nix plays if they can get him up to speed. And after that, I took Devin Singletary, another guy who was in that boring veteran.
This is the all boring run,
I am putting Scott. Together a boring roster. And, you know, the thing that felt really nice is after the draft, I forget what software they were using, but they projected the standings or they gave you a grade or whatever, and I got a B+. The guys on Sirius like my draft. I know that means nothing. Yeah. And some people are like, I want them to pick me last. Give me an F, you know?
Yeah.
It's always nice. It's always nice to have a little bit of validation. Yeah, I don't think I have by any means a juggernaut, but I built a very difficult team to market because it's Amari Cooper, because it's Devin Singletary, because it's Ramondre Stevenson, you know, even Rice. He's a run 7 yards and turnaround guy. He's not a home run hitter, you know?
Totally. Even Amon-Ra St. Brown, your first round pick is a really good and productive player, but he's not like the flash. It's not like you took Garrett Wilson or something like, ooh, whoa, what a pick.
There are not 70-yard touchdowns on my roster.
No, no, there are not. But your pick of Ramondre Stevenson, and I'll want to come back to my team in a second. But yeah, Stevenson, I agree with you that there was a point where not all of the running backs like Aaron Jones and Alvin Kamara went in this round, and I don't love those picks, but Stevenson stands out to me as the top of that kind of mid running back two tier where I would rather have him than a Keenan Allen or a Marquise Brown who went the two picks right, right after.
And the reason why I like him more than the running backs you mentioned is I like the idea that I still feel like Stevenson hasn't had his best season yet.
I agree.
Where Jones has had his best season. Kamara's had his best season. These are certainly guys on the way down. I mean, there's different opinions on whether or not Kamara's worth a pick this year, and people can feel that way totally as they want. But the point is that that's a descending player. You know, I want a player who I think is still on the way up, and Stevenson checks that box for me.
Yeah, I went with Jaden Reed in this round, in round five, because, and he's my wide receiver three, which in a start three receiver league, I don't love. I'm not in love with my receiver room. I like some of my later picks, but I don't feel as if I have that same level of hammer that I want there. Because then in the next round, I came back. You mentioned you took Cortland Sutton. I took Jaylen Warren in the sixth round because I kind of wanted that second running back. And I don't know, in a PPR league like this, I kind of like, I actually just have Jaylen Warren ranked ahead of Najee Harris straight up, which some people do not agree with, but I feel pretty good about
it. It's a classic case of, I think everybody in the fantasy community sees Warren as the more talented back, but it's Arthur Smith, right?
Totally.
Arthur Smith never met a lesser talented player he didn't want to fall in love with. And is it a 50-50? Is it a 60-40? Is it a hot hand? Does somebody have more goal line equity? I suspect that we're going to say all season, man, Warren's the best back here. Warren should be starting. Warren should be getting the majority of the touches, and he's not. Why? They didn't even extend Harris. They don't have long-term plans for Harris. Probably not anyway. Why are they not prioritizing Warren? I think it might be a case where, and we saw this in Atlanta, that Arthur Smith almost would call the plays despite everybody, right? I'll show you. You want Drake London to get more than two targets? Watch, he'll get zero next week. You want Kyle Pitts to be a top five tight end? Watch me make Jonnu Smith the featured tight end in the offense. I mean, it almost feels like Smith is doing it to get back at us.
I do think, though, there will be some level of control over that in Pittsburgh because Mike Tomlin's there. And he's like, hey, Arthur, that's cute, but, you know, let's get George Pickens the ball on this play. Let's get Jaylen Warren involved in this concept. So I don't worry as much about that with Arthur Smith in this particular situation. But I want to come to my what I think was my least favorite pick here. And it's not because I don't like the player. I love C.J. Stroud, the player, but stupid J.J. Zach Reason's in this room with me, and he was just on the podcast talking about why C.J. Stroud is a little bit of a problematic fantasy pick, not because Stroud isn't awesome, but, you know, and again, I want to put Stroud's profile to the side for a second because my wager here was, again, when I look at C.J. Stroud, who went off the board behind Kyler Murray, this is the seventh round. I actually think this is a fair place to take C.J. Stroud kind of just in isolation, but this is a start three receiver league and with the three flex spots, full PPR. I want a strong receiver room. I already don't think my first three are good enough with Tyreek Hill, Cooper Kupp, Jaden Reed. I take Stroud and like, okay, well, someone I like will be available in the eighth round. These are the picks that go literally like right after Stroud. Curtis Samuel, you take Devin Singletary, Jordan Addison, Brian Thomas Jr., Jamison Williams, Brock Bowers, Chase Brown, Taji Spears, Josh Palmer, Brandon Cooks, Romeo Doubs. You took Tyler Lockett, Jacoby Myers. I finally take Rashid Shaheed on the way back, but I'm like, damn, I really wanted Curtis Samuel here. I really wanted Jamison Williams to come back around to me. Even Josh Palmer or one of these guys. So Brian Thomas Jr., I would have loved to get back to me in the eighth round. I do think that ended up being a pretty big mistake for me.
Yeah, I think it's a case of C.J. Stroud is a solution in search of a problem because quarterback is so deep and you think, well, if it's 14 teams, it doesn't matter. And once the teams start taking the vanity quarterbacks, once Mahomes goes and once Hurts goes and once Josh Allen goes, those teams are never taking a quarterback until the very late stages, if at all, because they're playing catch up at the other position, the 6-point positions. And I think if you had – it's also with 14 teams, you have to just recalibrate and understand that – Curtis Samuel is somebody in a home league you're getting in round 11 or something. You're just never
the
getting
seventh
that value.
Round.
Right. You have to recalibrate that. And it feels wrong. Like, oh, Curtis Samuel, I like him. I can wait a round. And then you realize, oh, I can't. And it's just funny. You know, Brian Thomas goes, as you mentioned, a bunch of receivers who are high up on your board. And then you realize, as great as Stroud is, that your opportunity cost a quarterback would have been marginal. You would have gotten somebody you probably liked almost as much.
It's weird because typically in a draft, and this is why it's good to do multiple drafts and everything, because this was something I felt going into the draft, and now I feel it even stronger, is that typically when Stroud comes off the board, that's my signal to start targeting Kyler Murray. Or think, and then if Murray goes, then I start thinking about Jordan Love, who you took, and I want to come back to here in a sec.
I call that dog whistles, right? Like where, like the Buffalo receivers are all kind of ranked close to each other. So when one of them goes, it's like the dog whistle. Well, get ready with the other guys if you want them, right? Or 100%. As you mentioned, when Stroud goes, that's kind of the dog whistle. If you're a Kyler Murray guy, this is your time. If you're a Joe Burrow guy, maybe it's your time. Or a Love guy, or something. You know, Dak Prescott. Shout out to producer Colin, who told you to draft Brandon Cooks at dinner the previous night, I want to say. That's you did not draft Brandon Cooks.
I ignored him.
No, you ignored him.
Shout out to Colin, who's sitting right over there. But
wearing a Brandon Cooks jersey. On the Saints.
I think that's actually a Rams Brandon Cooks
jersey. Has Brandon Cooks played for all 32 NFL teams? Can we verify that? He's getting close.
Anyways, let's do a full Brandon Cooks breakdown on the next pod.
Yes, for sure.
But I think... like the weird thing is with the whistle analogy, somebody picked up the wrong whistle. Like Murray going first kind of screwed with my brain a little bit, thinking like, okay, it's good to pick Stroud, but you ended up taking Jordan Love. And again, this is what grinds my gears about this is you took Jordan Love in the 10th round. I took CJ Stroud in the 7th round. And I do think there are scenarios. This is where, like, I have Stroud ranked ahead. I have Stroud in a different tier than Love, but I do think there are scenarios. Maybe it's 20% likely or 15% likely. I think there are scenarios where Jordan Love is a better fantasy quarterback than CJ Stroud this year. Now, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on him? Because you did take him.
It is in play. Now, we like the infrastructure ecosystem, if you will.
Drink.
Both teams. Again, I talked about like Detroit running it back with Ben Johnson, Bobby Slowick still in Houston. And it's about time Matt LaFleur gets his credit. He's one of the best play designers, one of the best play callers. And when he and Love got on the same page and Love started to feel confident. And I know people look, oh, the touchdown rate, it's not realistic. That's Matt LaFleur. Matt LaFleur is driving that stat, even if it regresses a little bit. Look at how talented the receiver room is, at their playoff team last year. I think Jordan Love has been a screaming value all season. And that's why, and it's not that Stroud isn't good, but the thing is, what is Stroud? 60-40 to beat Love? 55-45 to beat Love? Maybe they're 50-50, and I get a 3-round discount on that. And it's funny, J.J. Zacharyson in the draft. I mean, what he made his bones originally late-round quarterback, and this is a great year to go late round. He did, by the way, go late round also. I think Joe Burrow was his quarterback.
Yeah.
9th round, I want to say, 7th round, something like that. A good price on Burrow. Yeah, ninth round. So J.J. is still going back to his roots with that. This is even in a 14-team league. I think the late-round quarterback strategy worked really well.
So I ended up going, again, kind of after that Stroud pick, I went 3 receivers in a row because I'm trying to make up ground on receivers.
For sure.
And I went Rashid Shaheed, Jahan Dotson, Michael Wilson, which basically is like I'm betting reception perception likes these better than the room, which is generally true of all 3 of those players. But what do you think, like likelihood here, Scott, that any of these guys become a weekly usable player in a format like this?
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Dotson last year.
Yeah, you were high on Dotson with me last year. You were actually higher, technically.
I was elbowing people out of the way, and I realized I was just elbowing myself out of the way. But it did not work out, and Sam Howell threw 1,500 passes, none of them on target. Dotson disappointed. Terry McLaurin, who I will forever be in his corner. You know, he can be retired. I'll still be drafting Terry McLaurin, but... yeah, hopefully Jaden Daniels is ready. Can Cliff Kingsbury be one of those failed head coaches who works as a coordinator? We'll see about that. But at this point, you're looking for plausible upside. And every player you draft is going to have something, quote unquote, wrong with him. I like Rashid Shaheed a lot. We saw he was kind of a darling in the fishbowl because his return yardage is part of that format. Really interesting quirk in that league this year. But nobody likes Derek Carr. If they had a quarterback people like, she goes 2 or 3 rounds early.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he is a splash play. Yeah. Waiting to happen. This guy gets behind defenses. Obviously, he's not Chris Olave. They still have Kamara. They have other pieces there. But Shaheed's a player, especially in this format. 3 wide receivers, 3 flexes. Shaheed goes from in a traditional home league. He's a bench player. He's, okay, we'll see if he pops. If he doesn't, maybe I'll cut him, whatever. You're going to start Rashid Shaheed in week 1.
Yeah, absolutely. I might be trying to get some weeks out of Michael Wilson, too. Mm-hmm. And I do think Michael Wilson is really underrated. He's actually one of my favorite under the radar second year receiver bets. Better rookie year than given credit for. If he can become just a little bit more of a consistent player, which like offensive coordinator Drew Petzing said in the media as well, I think he would really take a step forward. But before we close the book on the snake draft and move to the salary cap here, Scott, anything else you want to shout out from this draft? I know you picked Dameon Pierce in the 14th round. He does seem like a guy that's kind of rising a little bit.
You're just one injury away, Mixon, downside of his career. We'll see if he can see. And, Pierce is not a bad player. I realized last year he got hurt and Singletary got some momentum. And so the idea is, oh, Damian Pierce is no good. And we don't know that. He's third season. He's such a good value in his first season. And I like that you mentioned Wilson. You know, we've been spoiled because so many rookie receivers have splashed. Most of these guys are going to need development time.
Yeah.
You know, learn what the NFL is about, learn the routes they have to run at this level, and establish, you know, some pecking order with their team. So just because some guys don't splash right away, it doesn't mean they can't be good. And in the case of Wilson, I think he's a perfect like Mr. In a lot of standard leagues, he'd be a Mr. Irrelevant pick. He'd be like the first name on the watch list. If you have IR spots to play with, that's probably where Michael Wilson comes into play in a more traditional league. But I thought he was a good pick for you. I did not get a good tight end room. Worst tight end room in the league. Now, of all of the four major positions, I don't want to be weak anywhere, but at the expense of getting a running back room I liked, getting a receiver room I liked, getting what I thought was a competitive quarterback room, Matthew Stafford's my second quarterback. And in this format, most of the people did take two quarterbacks. That's the only time I cared about bye weeks, by the way, is on a quarterback. I pretty much ignored them for every other position. Sure. I'll deal with it when I deal with it. I think that's just an overrated strategy. Oh, I got to take another receiver because week 12 looks problematic. Your roster will be so different then. Yeah. But at quarterback, I do care about the bye weeks. But if we did it over again, I would have made a little bit more of a priority at tight end. But I'm fine with my boring value team. It's very much on brand for me.
It was definitely a boring value team, but I agree with you. If you can strike gold at tight end, you know, maybe Schultz is just a boring floor player. You end up finding somebody off the wire. I think this is a really good and competitive team. And yeah, my big lesson is definitely just, I don't know if I want to double up on onesie positions like I did here in the first seven rounds in a league where we're starting this many receivers and flex players. All right, let's take another quick break. When we come back, we will recap the salary cap draft, which was just a complete mess. So I'm looking forward to talking about that. All right, we're back. Scott, we did a salary cap draft because, shout out to Bob Lung for putting this whole event together. The expo is always awesome. Don't know whose idea it was to do a salary cap draft right after doing a snake draft because that really broke my brain, which maybe the results of the draft reflect that. But you are one of my go-to resources when we're talking about salary cap. I think you not only have a good sense of how to play the game overall, you have a good sense of player value, you have a good sense of how to read other people. So just big picture thoughts about this particular one and how it played out.
Yeah, it's my favorite format because you can build any kind of roster you want. Yes. You want to have the three best players in football? Go ahead. You'll have stars and scrubs. You'll have $1 players at the end, but that's your choice. You want to link guys together. You want to run a stack. Whatever it is, you can do anything you want. Roster builds that are not possible in a snake draft are available to you in a salary cap draft. And there's so many poker elements. Does this person really want this player that is trying to push me around? You look at that big...
Like when a certain someone I know nominated Alvin Kamara, I was like, well, okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you knew. I was sitting that one out. That's basically a bathroom break nomination.
Yeah, you threw a $10 bid out on a Kamara. I was like, I almost kind of hope no one bids, so Scott gets Kamara for 10 bucks, but didn't happen.
By the way, be careful with those bids, by the way.
Yes.
We saw somebody, I think it was Greg Kellogg, who had Josh Allen, and then he wanted people to bid up Patrick Mahomes. We threw up Mahomes for $15. Crickets. Nobody bid on Mahomes because, again, quarterback is not a position of need, but Mahomes is great. So now Greg Kellogg has the best quarterback room since Montana and Young or Favre and Aaron Rodgers or something like that. You know, you only start one. But, yeah, so I love the format because of the builds it allows. I thought the pricing was really aggressive early. So I ended up – my roster – and I talked about my draft was kind of a boring team, whatever. I went with no stars, just talent. I did not really have a first-round pick, and I had a lot of really good players, a lot of second, third, fourth, fifth-round talent. I probably have – more players in the top 100 than other people, but I don't have a first-round player. Yeah. So you have to be comfortable with, well, Derrick Henry, Nico Collins, they're my signature players. They're not first-round players.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry's on the back nine, doesn't catch a lot of passes. The offensive line come into question a little bit. And obviously with Nico, you know, they bring in Diggs. They have Tank Dell. It's only one football. So, and Nico's only done it once. As much as we love Nico Collins, and we were all in on him last year, there's certainly a downside to him. He's not as safe as some other guys. I just chickened out on Garrett Wilson. His price was getting really high. And here's another thing about salary cap, right? Is it's like Pulp Fiction. It's a story told out of order. Because you can nominate backups. You can nominate reserve running backs. You can nominate a tight end outside the top 10. It doesn't matter. You don't have to nominate by cheat sheet order. And a lot of times the timing, sometimes the best values are the early picks. Jamar Chase was not that expensive. I think Garrett Wilson was more expensive than Jamar Chase. That would never happen in a draft.
Yeah, Jamar Chase was 44. Garrett Wilson was 42. So it was close.
Okay, close. But there were examples. The point is that the timing and people's needs and people's maybe even their emotions at that moment will dictate the pricing structure. And so what's going to happen is people are going to look and cherry pick and say, how could you let this guy go for this amount of money? Oh, well, I didn't have the resources then. Yeah. Or my roster shape didn't fit that player at the time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a few like late in the draft that were really these kind of funny, like Keon Coleman for $14.
Oh,
like,
that's crazy. I got Shakir. I prefer to Coleman. I got him for $8. Just a lap earlier.
Yeah, and like those kind of picks happen. Jalen Wright for $12. And someone, I think it was, I can't remember who said it, but someone was like, where is he on the depth chart? But it's like, that was just
the auctioneer. There
was,
yeah.
Yes, yeah, the auctioneer who was electric, by the way. That most impressive performance of the day. Forget all of us drafting. Him calling out all the values.
He was so electric. Good with his cadence. It took me about 10 minutes to not be like hypnotized.
Yeah, no, you're right. It was a little like, wow, I'm just so busy being, oh, I should probably try to actually put some bids in on some of these players. But yeah, so that's a great one too. Like that makes no sense when you're just looking at this on paper, but in the context of what was going on at the time, it does make sense. Like Romeo Doubs for 10, Darnell Mooney for 9. Like some of these values are just wild.
Let me give you a key salary cap tip right here. Maybe the best tip there is. Okay. You have to get your players when your opponents still have alternatives. Mm-hmm. Because once they don't, for example, Amari Cooper was the screaming, unmistakable best receiver on the board when he came up kind of maybe 75% of the way through. And there were three or four teams that needed Amari Cooper. So he got pushed probably further than he should have because it was obvious there was no alternative. The next best receiver was like 10, 12 slots below Cooper.
Yeah.
So you have to try to fill your roster when your opponent can say, oh, you know what? This is getting a little hairy here. I can back out because I have alternatives. If you wait for the last good thing, that's when inflation kicks in. And that's when the panic buying. It's like there's a snowstorm coming in and everybody's on the shelves trying to get the last can of soup.
It's a great way to say it. Great way to say it. Yeah, Cooper went for $26, which was aggressive because, yeah, I mean, like DK Metcalf is 23. Mm-hmm. I would rather have DK Metcalf than Amari Cooper.
For sure, more explosive.
Zay Flowers goes for 19. I think you can make an argument that those guys should be pretty close. Terry McLaurin, 16. I have those guys pretty close in my ranking. So kind of just, again, this is why it's all over the place when you look at the values of these players.
For sure. And timing is everything. Who got Terry McLaurin, by the way? Do you remember?
Was that you? Was that Scott Pienowski for $16?
Who got the A-plus grade at the end? I know we're not supposed to care about those things.
I had to go out to the bathroom so quickly. So you had I ran
C.
out.
I was expecting D-minus or...
I was going to say, let's talk about my team here for a second because...
Yeah, you drafted a team too.
I did draft a team as well. And my goal in this salary cap draft was kind of what you said at the top. I wanted to come away with a team you cannot build in a snake draft, period, end of story. So I spent $52 on Bijan Robinson. I wasn't one of the first players to take a player. You were, I think, literally the last one maybe to get your first player.
Me and Pat, yeah.
Yeah, you and Pat Fitzmaurice. But I was kind of in the middle there, which is what I wanted to be. I don't ever like to just shoot out the gate, but I don't want to be the last one waiting. So I went Bijan for $52, which is pretty pricey when you look at some of the players here. But like McCaffrey went for 52, but those guys are both tier one backs to me. So I wasn't too upset about that. I come back at CeeDee Lamb, $47. That makes him kind of right there as the second priced receiver. Again, I feel great about that. These are two round one picks that you are never going to get.
Remember, too, that with salary cap, with your highest paid players, you're looking to make pars.
Yeah.
You're not saying, okay, CeeDee Lamb, be worth $70. You're saying just be great. You don't just be a top five receiver. You will make your profit elsewhere. You're trying to just make your money back on your signature players.
So here's where I'd make the analogy about my team. That's exactly what I wanted. Wanted two first round players. So I think I took off well. I don't think I completely landed the plane.
Stuck the landing, okay.
Because I come back with George Pickens at 21, Ramondre Stevenson at 19, Jaxon Smith-Njigba at 15, Chris Godwin at 16. I'm okay with those two receivers, but the Pickens and Stevenson one I think were a little rich, but I was kind of getting a little antsy in terms of the receiver runs. And you know, I just got beat out on other players from a pricing perspective, so I maybe gave a little bit more than I was wanting to get for George Pickens. Stevenson, again, I'm okay with him at 19, considering, you know, but at like the same time, Josh Jacobs went for 18. You know, DeAndre Swift went for 12. James Cook went for 20. I don't love that. So that's where I think things started to go awry for me. And then at some point I'm doing the $1 bid thing.
And you mentioned go awry. There's a one manager who bought four like top
tight
12,
ends.
Top 12 tight ends.
Yeah, that was Dennis Clausen.
Right.
He had Pat Freiermuth at $12, Kyle Pitts at 16, Travis Kelce at 23, and then Sam Laporta at 21.
Yeah, when Laporta came up, I think I only had Derrick Henry and Nico, maybe a third player. So I had a lot of money. And I'm at this point, I'm like, you don't want to wait so long with your usually patience in a lot of salary cap is rewarded and you get some great mid-tier values, which I like building teams like that, especially in a depth league like this. But at some point you get that fear, what if I wait too long and there's nothing left to get?
Yeah.
So Laporta was a good guy for me to go after. And Dennis is pushing back. I'm like, he's got three tight ends.
It's literally three.
He got Kelce like 10 seconds earlier. And I'm thinking, he's just trying to have some fun with me. And you know what? When I'm in salary cap league, I want the entire room to feel like I can walk away from any bid. I am not married to anybody. I don't have to have this guy. And I'm not picking on Dennis, a good player. And look, any strategy can pay when you pick the right players. Maybe he will pioneer the total tight end control drafting. You know, maybe Barron's tried that once upon a time. I don't know. But when he got that fourth tight end, we all started laughing. And that's the salary cap experience. You know, at one point, JJ's like, I hate my team. I hate myself.
No, he said he hated his life.
I think half the room at one point said something like that.
But I want to make this clear, though.
It's all fun, though.
Yeah.
It's in fun. I mean, it's – you were – and we had a live auction. A guy who does his father was an auctioneer. His son's an auctioneer. Yeah. Professional
like
guy.
Like a car auctioneer.
I felt like we were bidding on Van Gogh paintings or something. Yeah. You know, and he's like, 9-9, give me 10, give me 10. Yeah, I mean, it was – again, it took a while to get used to it and not be mesmerized by it. But at some point, half the room, you know, they're basically kicking themselves and they're beating themselves up, but in a good way. Mm-hmm. It scrambles. Like, I used to play professional Scrabble and the clock would be ticking down. And there'd be pressure and this mattered to me. And it's like, it's just nice to have those juices flowing, even though you don't always get what you want. Every salary cap draft I do, at some point I go, oh yeah, I should have done this. This was a moment. This was a pocket. This was a player. This was a bid I'd get stuck with. Well, I'm pretty good about not doing that. This is a player I got out on. I should have stayed in on. Maybe Garrett Wilson was that guy for me. And this is why, Matt, if I've recommended salary cap 1,000 times, I swear like two or three people told me that that's not for me. We can do it on Yahoo. It doesn't have to take that long. You can tinker the settings. It's a little bit longer than a draft. It's totally doable online.
Definitely budget some more time.
For sure. Budgets are what the software will estimate how long it's supposed to take. Just you probably want to lower the nomination times from what the standard settings are. It depends on who your room is. You can also do it offline and then, you know, make a day out of it. And then you upload all the rosters. But it just presents so many choices. And who doesn't like choices, right? We had that great Thai food restaurant Friday night, where five Yahoo-gans go out to eat, we all ordered something different because the menu was vast and everything was terrific, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Basically, you want to go to that Thai restaurant when you draft your fantasy team. You want choices.
And I think you did a really good job of that in terms of you got three guys who are probably two to three round picks, you know, round two, round three picks. I don't know if I would do the two round one players again, but if I did, I would probably try to shoot for more value guys to come away with more, I would say round 5 to 7 players, because I don't know that I necessarily pull that off. Again, I don't mind the receiver room of CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Chris Godwin. Brian Thomas Jr. actually was like, I ended up putting $9 in on him, which is a little aggressive, but I was like, this is the last guy in a tier. And that is one thing I would say, if you're doing a salary cap draft, make sure you have a tier list, because it's so as helpful as it is in a typical snake redraft league, knowing that, you don't want to be the last guy with the player in the tier. You want to be the guy in the middle so that you're not like, oh, shoot, I gotta spend up on this player because the tier is literally falling apart in front
of my eyes.
For sure,
yeah, that's that last good time where the last can of soup has five different sets of hands on it. You have to avoid that. And I forget who it was at RotoViz many moons ago talked about in deeper leagues, you want to dominate the flex. Mm-hmm. You want to have the best flex players in the league. And that's – you know, again, you know, Henry's my quote unquote first round pick. He's a second round player on everybody's board, maybe even a third round player to some people. Collins might be a third round player, but I think my flex starters, and we start three of them in this league, might be the best in the group, at least on paper. I mean, they got to play the games out. And for all we know, half my roster could be hurt in 3 weeks. So We'll still play the season. They gave me an A-plus map. I think we should still play the season. I think awarding me the belt would be premature.
That would be premature. You know, I think it would be best of you to earn it. That would be great. You know, we don't want you to come in here with this attitude of like, I've been there, done that, the whole thing. So, I think you got to earn it, Scott, for sure. I think two more things. One, I think my tight end room in this salary cap draft is worse than your snake draft. Jonnu Smith. Well, Isaiah Likely.
Remember, one guy depleted the room of four tight ends.
Yes, that was a thing that happened. Jonnu Smith I got for $1. Isaiah Likely for $3, which was my out loud moment of, I don't know why I just did that. And then Chig Okonkwo for $1 there too. So I think your Dalton Schultz, Tyler Conklin might actually beat that. So in a weird way too, it's like in this part of the league, I want Mark Andrews to miss time. So Isaiah Likely, I never want players to miss time, but If he misses time, I benefit there, but then I screw myself in the other league, so that really makes no sense.
What's funny, in the other league, I talked about how weak my tight ends were. I was not, knowing I wasn't going to get Kelsey, I tried for Laporta. I got out-muscled on that. That's fine. But I wasn't going to have the tight end room I had in the previous draft, so I'll have to ask producer Colin offline if he approves of Jake Ferguson, who had all those goal line opportunities last year. They weren't touchdowns. I think some of those cash in this year. And, you know, Cole Kmet. Look, I know they have great receivers, but he's going to score 6 to 8 touchdowns. I'm fine with that.
The ultimate boring tight end.
Yeah, so what I actually did is I downshifted a quarterback. So Trevor Lawrence, Matthew Stafford. I know it's not sexy. I know what's Trevor Lawrence's upside? Quarterback 6, quarterback 7. He runs a little bit. I like their skill talent. I don't love it. Stafford's a good player, not a great player at this point. But quarterback is like the train system in New York City. You miss a train, you catch one in 5 minutes. There's another one coming. You're never going to be harried at the quarterback position. I got my quarterback by very late.
Yeah.
And nobody really pushed back on my guys.
Yep. I ended up with Jordan Love in this one. So
Love it. I wanted him. Yeah. You elbowed me out of the way on Love.
Well, you elbowed me out of the way on Jake
Ferguson.
I said
I didn't have any more love to give. You know. And you know what? Also, that's diversity too. I don't want Jordan Love on all my teams.
Right.
Right? I mean.
Which is funny because Dave Richard had a different strategy here where he picked a lot of the same players because you like doubling up on that. You're technically doubling your upside, but I guess you're also doubling
and
your floor.
He may have saved a little bit too much money for the end game and then he didn't have stuff to spend it on.
Yeah.
But it's hard to know.
But it's hard to know, yeah.
Sometimes you'll see a player you think is a $20 player and you get him for $11. It's like, well, I just have $9 extra to spend. It has to go to somebody.
All right, Scott, let's end this podcast in honor of Andy Behrens from last year's show. Who do you think is the weirdest player that you drafted today, either in the salary cap or the snake draft?
Well, again, shout out to producer Colin. I'm believing that Zeke Elliott is going to fall into the.
Oh, that is not the weirdest player. No. Scotty. That is not the weirdest player.
DeMarcus
drafted.
Robinson. You buy that? He had a little uptick in the second half.
Yeah, I'd give you that one. Either him or Eric Gray, but he's also coming off an electric preseason game. So, yeah, I'll give you DeMarcus Robinson. No, it's not that DeMarcus Robinson was a weird player that you drafted. It's that there was a legit bidding war for DeMarcus Robinson. It was $4,
was,
so like whatever.
Was,
but, you know, because I think Bob Harris threw him out trying to get him as a $1. He goes, DeMarcus Robinson for $1. And Scott, I swear to God, I don't even think there was time to breathe. He goes, two, like immediately comes out and throws two, and then Bob threw three on him, and then you took four and you took him home.
Another great tip. End game. Okay. People have a little bit of leverage, a little bit more than the $1 minimum bid. A lot of times it's the race to two. Okay. Say you're down to dollar days. You can only bid $1. It may be the first person who recognizes a valuable player has been put out and gets to the key number, which is often two. Sometimes it's three. So you need to know, they had a display going at this draft, and what is your max bid? You need to be ready with that two or three if there's a key player that you want or whatever the key number is. Sometimes it's the first person, maybe two or three people can get to that number, but the first person who says it's going to get the player. So that's part of experience.
Totally.
You may not understand that nuance. You've done this format a few times, but the race to two, the race to three, the race to the key number will be a big determinant in who controls the end game.
Well, that was really good, serious analysis that you just gave about this format. I will say that in terms of the weirdest player that I ended up with was only because I was being a bit of a brat, and I'll use that nice word to say about what I was doing, because I guess I took Royce Freeman I'd had a lot of gross dollar players because I spent so much on the first two, but my final pick was $1 on Kevin Harris. Patriots running back.
Yep.
And I simply did that to be a jerk to JJ because
saw that.
I was like, I'm going to do something that's just, and you know, who cares? But I was going to do something that was like anti JJ's draft guide. So I said, oh yeah, you know, I read the late round draft guide and he had this whole great chapter in there about how you should always take the backup running back from the running back you took earlier. You know, he loves the running back insurance thing. That's very much JJ's strategy. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I was like, I'll take Tyler Allgeier for a dollar, which he had already been taken.
So you were totally on tilt then.
Looked like an idiot. And then I was like, well, I still have to complete the troll here. So I'll take Ramondre Stevenson's, not even backup, but the third stringer.
Backup to the backup.
Yeah, the backup of the backup.
Guy behind the guy.
Kevin Harris for $1. Definitely my weirdest pick. But you know, Scott, here's the deal. With this team, all these $1 all-stars and the top two guys, I'm going to have to be aggressive on the waiver wire in this league. I'm going to have to drop some hammers early on
for sure
to get difference makers.
A lot of times when the $1 players were going, I was joking, easy to cut.
Yeah, you just,
right?
Yeah, you did say
and,
that a lot.
And, you know, a lot of people listening, you're in an 8-team, 10-team, 12-team salary cap draft. Stars and scrubs is very viable in those types of leagues because the value, the replacement value in the waiver wire is very, very high. Now, what's going to be problematic for somebody who goes stars and scrubs in this format, a lot of $1 players, you're going to have guys to cut, but will the waiver wire have that high level of replacement? Now, granted, we're starting more players, so what they have to do to be relevant isn't as much. But if you are in, I would say if you're doing a salary cap, 8-team, 10-team, maybe even 12-team, stars and scrubs is a very strong consideration because the $1 players you get who you decide in September aren't worth it, you're going to be picking up really good talent. Where in a 14-team league like this with heavy bench, we also have four IR spots, which was a bone of contention to some. So we may not have the juicy replacement value that you would have in a smaller format.
Well, here's to your boy finding the next Kyren Williams on the waiver wire in this league because I'm going to need it to get that C closer to Scott Pienowski's A grade. Scott, that's going to do it for us, buddy. Really appreciate it. This was a super fun day. A packed day of drafting. Like I said, my brain needs to, I feel like I need to take it out, unplug it, plug it back in, you know, blow on the controller type situation. But super fun, buddy. And it was great to see you in person. And I'm looking forward to a fun rest of the weekend.
Yeah, great to see you. And just thanks to Bob Long again. And just everybody in the industry was here. It's been so much fun just touching base and, you know, sharing a chat, sharing a drink, whatever it is. It's just there's so many great people in this industry. And just to see, you know, some of our colleagues we don't always see, you know, like Colin and Aaron Tan, the social editor, and, you know, obviously Jason Klobach, our fearless leader. An editor, you'll get to, you know, break some bread with those guys too. So it's been a great weekend, and let's have a hell of a season.
Hell yeah, man. Looking forward to it. Yeah, if you're in the industry and you're not coming to the expo, you got to do it. Hey, if you're just somebody that loves fantasy football, come to the expo. It's great. It's an awesome time.
And we're at the Hall of freaking Fame.
Yeah.
You know, right, I mean, if you love football, they have all
it's
these exhibits
right
and videos, and, you know, it's, you know, I think there's a bust of Dalton Daldon in there somewhere.
I mean, if there's,
there should
not
be.
Now,
there will be.
There will be. I
there
mean,
will be, yeah.
Right next to the Trey Lance bus. It'll be the
Dalton. Sounds about right. So good.
All right. That is going to do it for us. Really appreciate you guys watching, listening. Shout out to you. Shout out to the Fantasy Football Expo. Shout out to the fantasy football community in general. I just gave you guys a shout out. So you guys should give me something. You should like the podcast. You should subscribe to the podcast. You should rate and review the podcast. Give a 5-star rating and review for Scott's A+ breakdown on freaking salary cap drafts. You're not going to get that stuff anywhere else. I guarantee you, I would take it as a personal favor. If it's a 5-star review, Scott would take it as a personal favor. If it's not, then I would take it as a personal insult. So I'll leave you with that. we're going to be back.
Yeah.
We're going to be back tomorrow with a great quarterback positional preview. We've got positional previews coming for you all week long. So stay tuned to the podcast. Man, it is preseason. It is fantasy draft season. What a time to be alive. See you all tomorrow. Until then, we're out.